You gotta clear your mind. She knows what scares you. It has from the very beginning. Don't give it any help. It knows too much already. 7 days.
Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish.
I didn't mean to startle you.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 153. And as I said last week, we will be doing Hellraiser Bloodline. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that sit there and go, really not sure about this one. And I actually was surprised that I actually liked this one. I mean, this movie, after this, it really just goes downhill. I mean, even the remake, I'm still on the fence about the remake. I did do the remake on this podcast, and I'm sort of like still thinking to myself, did I really like it? And I guess in some way I did. I mean, the Hell Priest, obviously, as we know, Pinhead is a female in the remake, but Doug Bradley, I guess he's had enough with doing Pinhead. He's made his money. He is now forever known as Pinhead. So I guess in that regard, he can now let things go to a new generation. But this one, I was actually really surprised at because, well, you know, obviously, I watched the rest of them and I'm like, oh my God, it just got worse and worse and worse as we went along. But this one was really good because it takes you back to find out just how the Lament configuration was actually designed, how it came about, and how it is able to let in the demons from hell. So this movie was running from 85 minutes, so it was a decent amount of time. There were some times that it did sort of start to drag along a bit, but I like the Cenobites that Pinhead actually does make, including the Devil Dogs, which is really awesome. Very much similar to, modeled after Chatterer, because the Devil Dogs had that same sort of, so the way that their teeth chattered together, you know, that was the way that they designed from Chatterer to these Devil Dogs. But even the female Cenobite was really, really, her makeup was amazing. Now, this movie was released on March the 8th, 1996. As I said, 85 minutes. The budget was $4 million. Unfortunately, it really didn't do very much at the box office. It did make $9.3 million. But remember, you've got to halve that because the cinema gets half and the filmmakers get half. So, you know, in regards to an outstanding movie that it's made so much money, I don't know what it made on the home box office as far as DVD rentals and VHS rentals. But I don't know whether it's, I think 96, I think we still had VHS. Yeah, we did. We still had VHS tapes, I guess, somewhere around the place. But yeah, as I said, it wasn't overly well received by a lot of people. I think by this time, we'd gone through Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, and we're like, okay, well, that was a bit of a dud, you know, and then we come up with this one. But as I said, this was rather surprising. So before we get really into the podcast, we need to sit back and listen to the trailer. So here is the trailer to Bloodline.
Centuries ago, a toy maker set out to build the perfect puzzle box. A gift that would bring enchantment to all who possessed it. He never dreamed that this simple toy was the key to the gates of hell.
Oh my God.
Do I look like someone who cares what God thinks?
Now, centuries later, a scientist has unlocked its secret. And the battle for the future of mankind is about to be fought across the boundaries of time. Bloodline.
Unfortunately, that was a lot of visual representation of the movie, but it was still a great movie to watch. And as I said, I would give my score right now, I would say a solid 4 out of 5. I'm not going to oversell it to the point where you're going to go and watch it and go, oh my God, that was a giant pile of crap. I'm just going to say to you that I enjoyed it for what it was. It's not, you know, Hellraiser Part 1 or Hellraiser Part 2, but it was still very much entertaining. And as I said, it really gives you an idea as far as what's going on with the way the Lament configuration was designed, how it was built, what it actually saw, and how it came to be what we all know it to be right now. Subsequently, this movie is the last major input with Clive Barker until the 2022 reboot. So it gives you an idea that he wiped his hands of Hellraiser, after this. And I understand that because, unfortunately, Hellraiser did go completely off the rails as we get further and further into the movie. But we open up this movie where we're in the year 2127 and we've got Dr. Paul Merchant, and he's an engineer. And this is where a lot of people sit there and go, oh my God, we're doing it in space. I mean, you know, we've seen Jason in space. We've probably already seen the Fast and the Furious in space. So we're getting to the point where like, this is ridiculous. But we're seeing that this guy seals himself in a room aboard the Minos, which is a spacecraft in space, obviously. And he designed this space station, and it's a really awesome-looking design. And as we see, some armed guards come in and attempt to break through the door. And as we're seeing this, Merchant is manipulating a robot into solving the Lament configuration in a room that is completely sealed off. It's almost like a, what could we say? It's almost like a safe where you'd actually keep large amounts of money. There's no way in hell that anyone's going to be able to get in. And unless you open the door, they can't get out. So there's this robot, and it's doing the Lament configuration, and it does solve it, and then it absolutely explodes into a million pieces. And of course, then we get to see a quick flash of Pinhead on the computer monitors, and this is where the guards manage to break through the door, and they decide to apprehend Merchant. And he says to them, well, listen, you know, and they take him into custody, and he says, listen, I'm doing something right now, and you know, if you let me finish, I'll discuss this with you. But of course, when he first gets arrested, he has to explain to the arresting officer, Rimmer, about what the hell's going on.
What's your name?
Rimmer.
I'm playing the end game here, Rimmer. Finishing something that began centuries ago, and I don't have the time to help you understand. You don't know what you're playing with. What are you afraid of? Whatever it is, it's here, in this station. That, and things your little rational mind couldn't even dream of. But I dream. Oh, I dream.
Parker was right. You are crazy.
I built this place for a reason. To create the biggest trap in the galaxy.
What did you expect to catch?
Hell is what I'm going to catch, and I'm going to burn it away in a blaze of light.
You're serious, aren't you?
If I tell you the whole story, will you let me finish what I began?
Now, one thing I really do love about this movie is the fact that we do get this flashback, and, you know, there's Paul Merchant, and he, great name by the way, because I'm Paul too, but Paul Merchant is explaining to Rimmer exactly how it was that the puzzle box came to be. So this is where we get this awesome flashback to Paris in 1796, and Dr. Merchant's ancestor, Philippe Le Marchand, is a French toy maker, and he's making the Lament configuration for a very wealthy aristocrat, and unfortunately we find out that the guy who he's actually making the box for is actually very heavily into the occult and his desire to open a portal to hell. So before we get to that point, we start to see the actual construction, and this is where Dr. Merchant is explaining to Rimmer about how the box actually came to be.
Centuries ago, a man, an ancestor of mine, Philippe Le Marchand, built a puzzle box. The first box, his finest work. commissioned by a wealthy aristocrat named Delil, a man obsessed with black magic, a leader of the occult. Philippe was so proud of his work, a work that would establish his name, his family, my family. He didn't know the great power the box held, the unspeakable things it would release, the evil, the sins, the pain.
Is it done?
Done.
Is it wonderful?
Wonderful.
Are you brilliant?
Finest toy maker in France.
Well, what does it do?
To a commission, to very specific requests.
It's almost midnight. Where are you going?
The Chateau de Rêve, to deliver the box.
Now? Why?
Because my work might be appreciated there.
So it's at this station, this point of the movie, that we're seeing that we are transitioning over to the very wealthy merchants, or the very wealthy, I should say, person that actually commissioned the box, and he's got a very young assistant with him. But anyway, we find out that this guy has managed to get a peasant girl to come over to his home, and he's entertaining this peasant girl. And at one stage, you know, he's offering her food and wine and stuff like that, and he gets her to sit into a chair, and his assistant Jacques is there, and as they're, you know, getting her to sit in the chair, and you know, this very wealthy guy is talking to her, and we see that Jacques ends up by tying her wrists to the chair, and this is where she's like, oh, so what's this for? And he goes, oh, this is just make sure that you don't bruise. And then all of a sudden Jacques puts a noose around her neck and starts to obviously strangle her to death. And as they're doing it, you know, the wealthy guy is like, okay, now remember, you know, keep the pressure steady. You know, we want to make sure it's an even kill. And as they're doing it, you know, she's looking directly at this guy, and he's like, oh, she's got spirit. Excellent. And we see that obviously they do kill her. And then we start to see the fact that Jacques ends up by starting to flay her skin off and obviously remove the skin from the body, dumps the body away, because they need the skin only because they are about to summon a demon. And of course, this is also when Philippe Le Marchand is looking through the window and actually seeing what's going on. Now, we also see that not only are they doing this, they've got the puzzle box, and it's almost like the puzzle box is watching this whole thing going on. And this is where we see that after they've flayed the skin off, there is blood everywhere, and they've actually painted everything they need to do to get all the incantations ready to go. The puzzle box is there, and we start to see this aristocrat starting to chant the words to summon the demon.
Spectare navicula suavis. Spectare ordeum suavis.
Now, I didn't want to go too overboard with regards to that audio grab, but that was just a small sample of what's going on, because that goes on forever. I mean, the guy is yelling and screaming, and the box opens up, and then all of a sudden, we start to see that the skin that's hanging from the rafters of the house suddenly becomes enveloped with a demon. And this is where, you know, Jacques, who was pretty much into this to begin with, he sort of like sits back and goes, okay, I didn't realize it was actually going to work. I just thought this was just all bullshit. But this is where it really does become a little of the old, oh my God, this actually worked. And this is where the aristocrat explains to Jacques what the hell's going on, and just to calm down and just remember what I taught you in your lessons.
My God.
Fear not, Jacques. Remember your lessons. A summoned demon is yours to command.
Unless you stand in hell's way.
Yes. He who summons the magic commands the magic. You are Angelique. He who summons the magic
commands the magic.
Now, obviously, there is some foreshadowing there because, you know, he's saying he who commands the magic controls the magic. And it's like, okay, but then Jacques says it, but he's got that look on his face like, ah. So that's the way it goes. Now, this is one part of the movie that I'm sort of like thinking to myself, there was some writing error. And I'm sorry to say this, but there really was. Because we are seeing that, obviously, Le Marchand, he's looking through the window. He actually sees what's going on. And he absolutely, you know, flees to his house in terror, seeing that this box is actually brought forth this demon. But it really hasn't, okay? The box didn't actually bring forth the first demon. What the box did, it actually watched what the wealthy merchant had brought forth. So really, maybe the box is now just a gateway to bring the demons in. But the original demon was not brought in through the box. The box watched it happen. So this is where the first writing error, unfortunately, occurs. Now, the second writing error occurs where, you know, you see that the guy is saying, you know, he who summons the magic controls the magic. And Jacques says it, but Jacques got the look on his face like, oh, well, then I can command the demon if, and obviously, as we see, you know, there's some foreshadowing what they're possibly going to do, that, you know, Jacques going to do to his mentor. However, in saying that, Jacques didn't summon the demon. It was his mentor that summoned the demon. So for him to command the demon, that doesn't work. That doesn't actually make any sense because, as I said, and I'm not trying to bash you over the head with this information, but the merchant, his mentor was the one that summoned the demon. He was the one that brought forth the demon into our reality. Now, Jacques was hiding behind a statue this whole time while this guy was invoking the demon into this world. So he's the one that controls the demon. Now, whether you kill the mentor or not, the fact is that you are not the person that summoned the magic, so you can't command it. So this is where the writing suddenly goes a little bit haywire. I don't think the writers were actually in sync with what was going on because this part of it doesn't make a lot of sense. And if you look too closely at this movie, you'll see that there are some glaring mistakes, but as I said, I'll still give it a 4 out of 5 because it was a solid movie, but I'm not saying this is perfect by any stretch of the imagination. It really wasn't. But as we know, you know, we see that this, you know, the guy, Le Marchand, he runs home and he's obviously seen this whole thing going down. So he goes to his professor. Now, his professor is, I think he's a coroner or something like that. And he's trying to explain to the coroner, his medical mentor, exactly what he saw and what can I do about it.
Story, Auguste. I saw what I saw, heard what I heard. The box opens the doors to hell.
This is the 18th century, Philippe. Not the Dark Ages. The world is ruled by reason. You even got rid of God. And if there is no heaven, then it follows reasonably that there is no hell.
I was at its very window last night.
Very well. Suppose, for the sake of argument, that what you fear happened has happened. A box that can open the gates of hell must be able to close them.
The box belongs to people with little interest in closing such doors.
Well, then the solution lies literally in your hands. You've designed a machine that you fear can bring forth demons.
Yes.
Then design a machine that can destroy them.
Now, as I said, this is unfortunately where the movie sort of like takes a writer's turn for the worst, because when he goes and he speaks to the guy and he says that the box brought forth the demon, it didn't bring forth the demon. It opened up when the demon had arrived. So it was almost like it was taking its essence into the box. So it didn't actually bring forth the demon. So when he says, well, okay, well then go ahead and create a device that will actually close the gateway to hell. He goes home and he starts to design something, but the way he designs it, it needs to do with lights and mirrors and stuff like that. Something that there is no way no way in hell that it's actually going to work. So this is where he decides, well, instead of me designing this, which I have designed it, this is technically what I could do to make it work, but I don't have the technology. This is 1796. There's no chance in once again, hell, that I can actually find any way to actually make this happen. So instead, I think I'll just go over to the mansion to steal the box back. So when he goes over, he discovers that Jacques has actually killed LaSalle, which is actually his mentor. Now, once again, and of course, we see that Angelique and Jacques are getting it on, you know, physically, in the sense. Now, once again, this is where I have a hard time understanding this, because he didn't summon Angelique. He literally sat there and watched LaSalle. He was the one that actually brought forth the demon. So technically, if you kill LaSalle, that means the demon should actually turn on you and kill you, because the person that brought them forth, you've killed them. So in retribution, they should go and kill you. But this movie doesn't do that. This movie says that, okay, these two, or Jacques, has killed his mentor. He's now having physical relations with Angelique, and now he's commanding Angelique. So we see that Merchant goes in, or La Marchand goes in, and he sees that the puzzle box is on a hallway bench. And as he's going towards it, we're seeing LaSalle, and he's been stabbed numerous amounts of times. He's got wire across his mouth, obviously almost like to try and shut him up. And as he goes to grab the box, LaSalle is still, I don't know how he's still alive, but he's still alive, and he goes to grab the box to stop La Marchand grabbing the box, obviously. And then this is where we see that Angelique comes into the room and confronts Le Marchand about what he's done. And then we unfortunately see there is a bit of a turn for the worst between Le Marchand and Jacques.
Toymaker, you have such pliant fingers. I want them to play with me.
Take my soul.
It's already gone, Toymaker. Demons will walk the earth, and you're responsible. Think of that. You and your bloodline cursed to the end of time because of your little puzzle box. What are you waiting for? Kill him and come back where you belong.
Unfortunately, it doesn't work out all that well for Le Marchand, because he is killed, and he manages to make his way staggers back to his home, where he informs his wife that he couldn't actually stop what was going on, and we see that he passes away. Now, we fast forward the movie from there into 1996, and we see the Le Marchand's descendant, John Merchant. Awesome how they've got different names, but we keep the same thing. John Merchant, he's an architect, and he's built a skyscraper in Manhattan that resembles the Lament configuration. Now, at the end of the last one, we saw that the girl who is the end girl puts the puzzle box into the concrete of a building, and suddenly the inside of this building is the limit for configuration. So this is where the writers should have gone back and watched the third one, because now we're seeing that this guy has built this skyscraper resembling the limit configuration. So I don't know whether it actually follows on, or whether, you know, whether the box that went into the concrete is actually the same one from number 3 to number 4. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I think the Lament configuration called to John Merchant to design the building in the same configuration as the box. So we're going to go with that. And we're seeing that, obviously, we're 1996. We've gone from 1796. And we're seeing that Angelique is talking to Jacques about the fact that she wants to go and see America. Now, remember, the big thing that his predecessor said, you can do anything you want to with a demon, with a summoned demon, but just do not stand in hell's way. Now, obviously, over the time that they've been together, he's had everything that he wants. And we also find out that he is now 200 years older. So she has given him immortality. So with everything that she's given him, and she just wants to go to America because she wants to track down John Merchant, because he is the bloodline from the original toy maker. But it doesn't work out well for Jacques if he does happen to stand in hell's way, which we're about to find out.
Le Merchant? The bloodline continues, Toymaker. I'm restless. And you're bored. I think we should see America.
Screw America.
Then I would like your permission to go by myself.
No.
Don't you want to know why I'd like to go?
No.
Is that your final word?
Yes. Yes. You should know what those things are.
Jacques, have I ever disappointed you? Close your eyes. Don't move.
Why?
So you won't bruise.
Is this a new game?
Oh, yes. It might hurt. Just a little.
Oh! Jesus!
Jacques, do you remember Delisle's lesson?
Perhaps it was a bit hasty.
Enjoy. I forget. You like it rough, don't you?
Please.
Yes, you like it rough.
Number one rule, Jacques. You tried to stand in hell's way.
What are you talking about?
the Toymaker's bloodline has survived. The box. America.
Unfortunately, it doesn't go very well for poor old Jacques, because standing in Hell's way is not a good idea, and we see that unfortunately Jacques is killed by Angelique. And then we follow her, and she ends up by going to America, and she goes to the United States, where she goes to try and seduce John Merchant, because he's got sort of like an opening of the building, and where people are congratulating him on his design and stuff like that. And she tries to seduce him, but this really doesn't work very well, and he ends up by leaving the situation. So we're seeing that Angelique's walking around the foundations, or walking around the walls of the building, and for some reason she stops and she slams her hand into the wall and pulls out the box. So this is where I'm agreeing right now that the box that had been put into the concrete foundations was actually still inside the building when it was designed. So we're seeing that it is following from number 3. So we also see that she ends up by managing to trick a security guard to solving the puzzle box. And you know, I think he's got more of an agenda of, well, because you're a very hot looking woman, you know, if I do this, I'll get a chance to be with you. Unfortunately, when he ends up by solving the puzzle box, this ends up by summoning Pinhead, or the Hell Priest as we come to know him, obviously, as we know. And this is where Angelique confronts Pinhead and talks to him about what this is, what's going on with this building.
Angelique.
Things seem to have changed.
Hell is more ordered since your time, Princess. And much less amusing. The box did this.
A man did this. But the box called him. And called to his blood. His ancestor made the box. And would have unmade all of us.
You've been away too long, Princess.
This is not a room. This is the Holocaust waiting to wake itself.
So unfortunately, even though we've got a meeting between Pinhead and Angelique, the two immediately clash, and as Pinhead represents a shift in the ideology of hell, he's got a different idea of what hell is. And of course, she left behind, 200 years ago, of her ideology of hell. And while Angelique believes in the corrupting of people through temptation, Pinhead is fanatically devoted to pain and suffering. Of course, despite their conflicting views, the pair forge an uneasy alliance to kill Merchant before he can complete the Elysium configuration, which is basically an anti-lament configuration that creates perpetual light that would serve to permanently close all the gateways to hell. So this is where, Pinhead sees this building and goes, oh, this is wonderful, but this room is the blueprint to what could be the closing of hell. So this is where he starts to look upon this room as like, okay, this is, a catastrophe waiting to open, because if someone designs what he's actually created in this room, this could actually close the gateways of hell. So we've got to stop this altogether. So we see that Angelique and Pinhead initially collaborate to corrupt Merchant, but of course Pinhead decides that Pinhead is growing tired of Angelique's seductive techniques and threatens to kill Merchant's wife and child. So this is where we're seeing that, he wants to come towards Merchant and discuss exactly what's going to go on, and you have to complete your work as far as destroying what you've created downstairs.
I don't know who or what you are, and I don't care. I just want my wife and my kid back.
Oh, I understand. Well, you love this boy. You have plans for him. Hopes and dreams. A whole imagined future where you love him and watch him grow.
Yes.
Then complete your work. Although the boy will not die here, for 1,000 years his dearest wish will be that he had.
For God's sake.
Do I look like someone who cares what God thinks? Box. A pathway to hell made by an ancestor of yours. The room downstairs, potentially a bigger pathway. You will help to fulfill its promise.
Now, obviously, as we know, Pinhead wants to have the gates of hell continuously open to him to make sure that this thing that he's designed, and what it really is it's a, as I said, it's a series of lights and mirrors that will blink, that will basically be activated, and then they'll blink out in a few seconds, closing the gateway of hell. Now, this is where Angelique sort of like looks upon this and goes, this might be a very good time to get him to close the box. And that way, because really what's happened is Angelique wants no part of Hell's new fanatical hierarchy. And she is really, has grown accustomed to being on Earth. And she wants to stay on Earth. She doesn't want to go back to Hell. So she intends to force Merchant to activate the Elysium configuration and destroy her, basically destroy Hell, basically freeing her from its imperatives. And of course, however, Merchant's flawed prototype fails. It doesn't work. Because, you know, she's saying to him, you know, what does it do? And he's like, okay. And because he doesn't know that she's obviously a demon. So he brings her into the room where he's actually got this all set up with this computer screen. And he explains to her that through a series of lights and mirrors, it'll just run for a few seconds, then it'll blink out, and that's it. Now, he doesn't really know exactly what it's going to do. Although he knows that apparently, handed down through the generations, from his very first ancestor in 1796, this should technically close the gateway of hell. So this has come all the way through his bloodline. So now, you know, she is very keen for him to finish it and go, okay, now Pinhead's idea is I want you to finish what you basically started, which is this room is a gateway which will always remain open. So I want you to design a brand new box that there is no way in hell that even if this thing activates, it will ever close the gateway of hell. So this is where the conflicting conversation is going between Pinhead and Angelique. Unfortunately, it doesn't work very well because, obviously, as we said, the prototype completely fails. And we also see that Pinhead ends up by killing Merchant, but his wife opens Angelique's lament configuration that she's got, sending Pinhead and Angelique back to hell. So it's like, oh, okay. Now there's been a couple of things in between where you've got a security, two security guards that have been turned into Cenobites. We've got the confrontation between Merchant and Pinhead. But now the movie transitions after all this that's been going on. In 1996, it fast forwards to 2127, where we're seeing Rimmer, and she is still disbelieving Dr. Merchant's story, and has him locked away. And of course, we're seeing also that Pinhead and his followers, all the Cenobites, now including the enslaved Angelique, she's gone back to hell, and she's now in her Cenobite look, have already been freed in this room, which was being opened by this robot. As we saw in the first part of the movie. Now, even though that Rimmer has disbelieved what Merchant is saying, he is somehow just continuously talking to her about the fact that this is really happening, and shows her a configuration of the Elysium, which is going to close the gateways of hell. And as we're seeing, and as she has been exposed to other Cenobites that are in the station now, we're seeing that she's actually working out that, yes, okay, maybe you are right and this is actually real. So we are seeing now that she is allowing Dr. Merchant to finish what he started. And we find out that Dr. Merchant reveals that the Minos, which is the space station, is in fact the final. It's a perfected form of the Elysium configuration. Try saying that 10 times. That is being activated in space, where it can kill Pinhead permanently and seal the gateway to hell. So this is where Dr. Merchant, and remember, we're in the year 2127, we've got hologram technology, and this is where a lot of people sit there and go, really? Now we've got, you know, Hellraiser in space? But this is really good, because he goes up to Pinhead in a hologram form and actually talks to him about what's going on.
Merchant, do you hear me? I know you're watching. We'd almost given up waiting for you to play.
Long wait, demon. For such a short game.
Short? Oh. Is that any way to treat an old friend of the family? Tell the truth, Merchant. You're pleased to see me. Your impatience has matched my own.
Perhaps. But now curiosity is satisfied. And it's time for revenge.
So, of course, while after we've seen this big conversation going on between him and Pinhead, he disappears completely in front of Pinhead. And he's like, what is going on? And we're seeing that Dr. Merchant and Rimmer are now aboard a spacecraft that is flying away from the station. And once clear of the station, he ends up by activating the Elysium configuration, a series of powerful lasers and mirrors that creates a field of perpetual light, which the station transforms and folds around the light to create a massive puzzle box. And this is where a lot of people sit there and go, really? But this really, it does work. Believe me, it does work. The light's trapped within the box and killing Pinhead and his followers, thus ending Pinhead's existence permanently. The movie goes black, and that is the end of Hellraiser Bloodline. Now, as I said, on a scale of 0 to 5 buckets of blood, 0 being how do I get the last 85 minutes of my life back, to 5 it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again, I'm giving it a solid 4 out of 5. I think the way they actually designed it, I think the premise of the movie is solid. I think the acting is solid. I also think that getting a chance to see where the puzzle box originated from is amazing, because we never really got to find out where did this box come from? How was it designed? Who designed it? Well, now we know. And I like it how it just follows the bloodline all the way through from 1796 to 2127. And we really, it's a great conversation that Pinhead and Merchant have together, about the fact that, you know, we've been waiting centuries for you to play and you haven't played, and now we're finally at the end game. And, you know, Dr. Merchant's whole thing of like, well, this is it. You know, this is, I'm closing the gates of hell for good. But look, I think it's a solid movie. And if you get a chance to see it, please don't see anything after this one. But really, you can watch 1, 2, 3, and 4 confidently. I mean, okay, number 3 does have its issues. I mean, CD... Cenobites. We've also got, you know, a bartender Cenobite and a guy with a camera in his head. I understand there are some glaring issues with number 3, but number 3 is still rather fun. But number 4, Bloodline, it really does go a little bit further to show you the origin. And I think this is a great origin story as to where this whole thing started and originated from. So look, solid 4 out of 5. If you get a chance, please go and watch it, because you really won't be disappointed. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie. I thoroughly enjoyed, delivering it to you for the podcast. So, yep, I like this movie. Before we get finished on this podcast, though, we have to go with Paul's fun facts. So there really are some great trivia points from this movie. Now, one of them, Kevin Yeager, he's actually the director, and he disowned the version with the cuts made behind his back due to conflicting artistry ideas. Yeager's version contained much more graphic imagery, plot, and explained everything that had happened in the film. The producers disagreed and demanded Pinhead should appear sooner, despite every version of the script up until then having him appear around the 40-minute mark. When Yeager was unable to satisfy, he disowned it and never finished filming some final scenes. Joe Chappelle was brought on to finish the film, filming new scenes from rewrites, including the narrative framing device. Some scenes of the original script thus were never shot. That's such a shame, because I think that that would have really gone on to really show exactly how much more in depth. I understand that they wanted to get Pinhead to be on the screen sooner, but really, you know, as we know, Pinhead's grand entrance has never been at the beginning or, you know, of the movie. It's always been to the middle, you know, and a little bit to the end, but it really just comes in at the crucial area. But getting him to be on the screen sooner, okay, but, you know, I would have liked it to be just, you know, just let these guys do what they do best. So now Adam Scott, and he's the one that plays the plays Jacques, was very grateful for getting cast, citing the film as being a huge deal for booking a real movie, which he took very seriously. Awesome, you know, this is a movie that you really want to excel in. So he remarked that on his first day on the set, he was shown to his chair that was mistakenly labelled as Adam Craig. And of course, Scott said it was a nice welcome to Hollywood. Despite the film's troubled production and box office failures, Scott didn't care as long as he was working. Later, in need of work, he did audition for a sequel with the hopes that he might be getting a chance to be, you know, cast in the sequel, and citing the directors wouldn't remember him from the last film. Of course, no one said anything in the audition. However, Scott suspects that someone remembered him, as he wasn't hired for the sequel. He did actually a credible job in this one, but unfortunately, yeah, we start to see that maybe that might be a chance that he really was seen and gone, nah, I don't think so. Now, unfortunately, due to the film's critical and financial failures, this would be the last Hellraiser movie to get a wide theatrical release. I remember that because I saw this at the cinema. Although some of the later sequels were screened at film festivals and in various other limited screenings before they went straight to video. So, yeah, you can sort of see that we went from the Hellraiser, then we went to Hellbound, then we went to number 3, then number 4, and then everything else, yep, go to the video store. Yeah, unfortunately, the other ones were not good at all. But yeah, I did remember seeing this one when I went to the cinema. And just a couple more fun facts before we finish off this podcast. So, although through promotional photographs of an aristocratic Cenobites wearing white powdered wigs were released in various sci-fi magazines to basically promote this film, the Cenobites were cut from the finished film. That's really a shame, because even in the trailer, you get to see these Cenobites dressed up in very aristocratic wigs and costumes, but you can see that they are demons. So that was actually really such a shame that they actually did that, but only, and then basically never put it in. I really hope that maybe one day there might be a definitive version of this movie being released, along with the demon clowns and an entire ballroom fancy dress party. That would be awesome. But unfortunately, the studio wanted to get Pinhead's story sooner, so they actually cut that entire scene in the ballroom, which is such a shame, because that would have been awesome to actually see. And one final one before I finish off the podcast. Now, I was telling you about there was a dog that looked like Chatterer. The scripts described the Chatterer beast as pieced together from the remains of a dog and a man after a car accident. So... So there we go. There is the Chatterer Beast. I didn't know what the hell to call it, but there we go, the Chatterer Beast. And it is very close to Chatterer, as we all know, in the original movie. But yeah, pieced together with the remains of a dog and a man after a car accident. Who knew? But there we go. Anyway, thank you very much once again for coming to visit me at the Horror Crypt Podcast. Remember, I have got Facebook and Instagram pages. I'm also available, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. So if you want to reach out to me, and if you've got any movies you'd like me to do or suggest, please reach out to me at ways you can do it, either through email or direct messaging through Facebook or Instagram. And I would love to do that for you guys. But look, as I said, Thank you very much once again coming to visit me every single week. I really appreciate it. I really hope you guys are still enjoying the podcast. And until next week, I will say, like I say every single week, I will creep you later.
Anal cleansing dates back to the Egyptians. Coffee enemas have been all the rage for a few years now. But at Rectify Holistic, we say, why stop at coffee? We have detoxifying all-natural enemas for every occasion. Get that minty fresh taste with a peppermint enema. Or be hydrated from behind with a coconut water enema. Acquire all the charm, hygiene, and je ne sais quoi of a Frenchman with a garlic enema. We've also got relaxing and inspiring flavors like Irish coffee, fruit juice, hamburger meat, or spicy ground turkey. Become nature's softy serve machine with an ice cream enema, or get ravaged by a burly Russian with the St. Petersburg surprise. Rectify Holistic. Come and get properly clean today.